I would like to take a step backwards before we take a step forward. And this step backwards is to the end of the 22nd chapter. In this 22nd chapter, actually we might even go a bit further. No, yeah, we'll start there. In the 22nd chapter, which is entitled The Elements of Material Creation, Krishna had described that how everything was none different from him. He described the different elements, as the chapter title implies. Described the different elements, and it described how the soul, trapped on the material platform, identifies with the body, describes what birth is, describes basically the combination of the soul and matter and how they're actually quite different. So Krishna described many things. And then towards the end of the chapter, Krishna says in text 56, one who is meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, it does not go away. Material life, even though it is not real, it does not go away. Because there's the soul completely different from his bodies, subtle and gross bodies. But yet, due to that tendency to enjoy the material world, and that tendency tendencies in the different various ways to enjoy the material world. These are it's the actions of the prison keeper, Maya, because of the false ego of the living entity, which causes him to be independent from Krishna. So therefore he needs another identity, and his other identity is as one who enjoys in the material world. So it is that interaction between the soul through the mind, through the senses, to the material world, with the tendency or with the object of trying to enjoy and trying to be the enjoyer, that keeps on, it makes ever fresh sanskaras within the consciousness of the living entity. And the dream of the material world, as Krishna himself says here, it does not go away for one who is meditating on sense gratification. And then that illusion based on the material dualities, what is the difference, what is the connection between the material dualities and sense gratification? Because as soon as one sees or wants sense gratification, then he makes the discrimination. This is favorable, this is not favorable for my pleasure. So material duality naturally follows the mood of sense gratification. And then thinking that this is going to make me happy and this is going to stand in the way of my happiness when meditating on the material world, one is trapped within the prison of the material world. He cannot see the illusory nature of the material world, and therefore he cannot see himself as different from the material world. He cannot see himself as eternal, while the material world is ever shifting and temporary. So after describing this, these elements of material creation, in the next chapter, Krishna describes in the song of the Avanti Brahmana the activities of someone who has become firmly determined to give up this sense gratificatory relationship with the material world and the mood of exploitation. And he is so fixed, he understands that the material world does not cause my misery. It is my mind contemplating the material world as enjoyable. It's not the material world that's my enemy. There's only one enemy, and that's my material mind. So at the end of this chapter, the Song of the Avanti Brahmana, or near the end, the solution is given about how to transcend the material world of duality, and that's in text 57, that etansa ashtaya paratmanishtam, that one can become completely fixed in paratmanishtam, fixed in his devoted relationship with Krishna. In other words, he takes full shelter of the Supreme Lord, and therefore his vision completely changes. It completely changes to this material world being the place where I enjoy and become miserable in my attempt to enjoy. Rather, he only sees one thing, and that is his relationship with Krishna, which is he's trying to give Krishna pleasure. He's trying to please Krishna. And he sees the material world not as different objects of his own pleasure, but rather the material world is meant for Krishna's service. So he has a completely different relationship with the material world than a materialistic conditioned soul who is in that kind of illusion. So that's etansa ashtaya paratmanishtam. By being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, he crosses over the insurmountable ocean of the material world. And this is the methodology that's been approved by the acharyas to cross over this ocean. You cannot cross over by your own power. This material world is not only illusory, but it is so tricky. You cannot tell the water from the land. And that which has no pleasure-giving potency appears to be the most pleasurable, the most offering, the most pleasure. So this Avanti Brahmana just became completely fixed, and he understood the difference between reality and illusion, and he was fixed in that. And the fixedness was in his own mind, his own consciousness. He was fixed as a servant of the Supreme Lord, paratmanishtam. He was fixed in that, unwaveringly fixed in it. And interestingly enough, what caused his fixedness was the distress that the material world offered him, the disappointment. We also saw that earlier in the story of Pingala. She became fixed due to disappointment and misery, and so did the Avanti Brahmana. So the conclusion of the song of the Avanti Brahmana was also the conclusion of yoga, Krishna says, is that you have to fix your intelligence on me, your mind on me. Nirghana manodhya. You should fix, bring under control the mind with your intelligence, aveshitaya, and become absorbed in me. This is the essence of all yogic and spiritual practices, this absorption in Krishna, and is also known as Krishna consciousness. And we see the perfected example of this in the residents of Vrindavan, and they didn't have to practice at all, and they didn't have to read the Shastra to find out that they should do it. They were just naturally and spontaneously absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And although appearing externally to be ordinary people, they were actually the greatest of yogis, the most powerful of personages, because they were fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna's service. So then, after that has been established. Then again, in 24, we turn again to the process of Sankhya. And Sankhya, as we have discussed, because it's been mentioned quite a few times in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto and the 11th canto, that the system of this is looking at the material world through one's intelligence instead of through the mind absorbed in the thoughts of sense gratification. And when one looks at the material world in a Sankhya mood, one sees the elements. Just like when a builder, a person who lays bricks, he looks at a building, and because he'll see the bricks that are beneath the structure or the paint on the outside, while I might only see the paint on the outside and the decorations, but when he looks, he sees something quite different than I see. He sees the bricks that it is made of, and he's looking to see how it's constructed and if it's a good job or a bad job, because he has a particular vision of the building due to his own consciousness. So a person practicing Sankhya, when he sees the material world, he breaks the illusion of seeing it as enjoyable by looking at the elements that compose the object that ordinary people will think of as objects of their enjoyment. So he just breaks everything apart through his intelligence and sees the composition of it. He doesn't see the object as enjoyable, but with his intelligence, he sees the elements and he sees that he himself, the soul, is different from these elements. And then Krishna, towards the end of the chapter, beginning in 21, Krishna explains, or even earlier than that, in 20, he explains that he is the basis. So he sees all the elements, but then the ultimate in Sankhya is to see that Krishna is the basis of it. And this goes back to pretty much what the Hansa avatar said, but from a slightly different point of view, about the mind and the sense objects having their interwoven connection, but the Supreme Lord being the origin and basis of both of them is the unifying principle. So Krishna is explaining it at the end of 24 that he is the unifying principle of all these different elements that you've been counting, and also the soul itself. And also keep in mind that all this is in the Uddhava Gita is a response to Uddhava's question: is how can one who is, how can I, or how can one who is in this world without your personal association, without you standing before me, Uddhava is saying, just like you're standing before me now, how can he remain fully aware and conscious of you and be free from the illusory energy? So there are so many different methodologies that have been described of just doing that, of staying with Krishna without being in his direct presence and staying with Krishna by means of consciousness, one's own consciousness. So for the Sankhya person, in 19 even, Krishna says, he starts pointing to himself as the foundational basis of Sankhya. We should keep it in the bag, so when the flowers fall, they just fall in the bag and keep it efficient. Where is this from? So in 19, Krishna says that the material universe is real because as its origin, it has Lord Mahavishnu, which is, and he is the resting place of the material creation. And that Mahavishnu and time, which causes the manifestation of the material world, they are not different from me. the supreme absolute truth. By definition, there's nothing that can be different from Krishna because he's the supreme absolute truth. And if there was something external to the absolute truth, something that wasn't included within the absolute truth, then the absolute truth would not be the absolute truth. So Krishna is explaining here through the process of Sankhya that one will come to the point of being with him in consciousness, because in reality it's not possible to not be with Krishna. It's not possible because there is nowhere where he is not, and there is nothing that doesn't emanate from him, including the soul itself. So everything is connected to Krishna. So then in the 20th verse, he explains it's Krishna's glance that causes the material universe to exist and continue developing in the process of its development. And that all in the material world is part of the universal form, and the universal form, Krishna is the basis of that. And everything is manifest from the five elements that come from Krishna. So there is nothing, so you can count them, and that's what Krishna actually, not in this chapter, but that Krishna had begun by saying first there is one, the oneness of everything, and that's him. So if there is nothing separate from him, again, he's the absolute truth. So, and everything at the time of annihilation merges back into him as it all came from him at the time of creation. It is from him that all creation and annihilation are manifest, including the souls themselves. Just as the rising sun removes the darkness of the sky, similarly the scientific knowledge of cosmic annihilation removes all illusory duality. And that means that there is nothing separate from Krishna. So Krishna is explaining himself as inextricably woven into all in existence. And pretty much one can almost say that one has to try very hard not to be Krishna conscious, because he's everywhere. But why does that seem like a funny statement, that one has to try very hard to not be Krishna conscious? It seems funny because we're past masters of this. We make something very difficult look very easy. And why is that? Well, what is the illusion that the living entity is placed in, the nature of this illusion that causes him to not be able to see Krishna even though he may want to? So that's the subject of this chapter and the next chapter. And then the final chapter, but 27, will speak about how to turn to Krishna in such a practical way to see Krishna and develop the relationship with Krishna through deity worship. So a conditioned soul who is not able to see Krishna, he can do so and develop devotion through deity worship. So that's in the second part of tomorrow's class. So in the beginning of the 25th chapter, Krishna said, "O best amongst men, please listen as I describe to you how the living entity attains a particular nature by association with individual material modes." So Krishna's going to explain the conditioned or non-natural nature of a soul who's been covered by the illusory energy, who can't see him, who is in the grips of false ego. There are countless souls, and they all have individual natures. So what is the cause of those individual natures that are covering the soul? And it is, as Krishna says here, by association with individual material modes. 2-5. Mind and sense control, tolerance, discrimination, sticking to one's prescribed duty, truthfulness. So these are all aspects of the nature of a conditioned soul. And that these, even though they may be very excellent qualities, they are springing from the modes of material nature. They are not springing directly from the soul itself. They're all springing from the coverings. Truthfulness, mercy, careful study of the past and future, satisfaction in any condition, generosity, renunciation of sense gratification, faith in the spiritual master, being embarrassed at improper action, charity, simplicity, humbleness, and satisfaction within oneself are qualities of the mode of goodness. So those qualities, born of the mode of goodness, they are pratikul, they are helpful, they are favorable for advancement in spiritual life. So much so that they are practically none different from the process of advancement in spiritual life. And we're taught to cultivate these qualities. So is it interesting to hear that these are born of the modes of nature? And in other words, they're not born of the soul. So what is born of the soul? Well, that's part of the answer. Krishna consciousness, devotion to Krishna, because what the soul is a lover of Krishna. Krishna Nitya Das. This is who we are. And these qualities are useful for uncovering the soul's true nature, but they're not in and of themselves the soul's true nature. So those are born of the mode of goodness. Now listen to the next set, because they're not born from the mode of goodness, but rather they're born from the mode of passion. Material desire, great endeavor, audacity. What does audacity mean? Other than if... Yes, very much so. Anyone has their handy online dictionary or something?
Unmitigated goal.
Huh?
Unmitigated goal.
Okay, now you have to give us a definition for unmitigated goal. Yes. If so, huh? And it's interesting when we hear these, the different qualities born of the three modes of material nature, how does your consciousness react to them? And we could take our personal inventories to see. See which of the modes of material nature are interacting within us. Material desires, great endeavor, audacity. Who has audacity? Anyone else have a different sound program? Because that's the one I use. You don't have that? There's a sound program on the computer for editing sound files. Audacity. You don't have audacity. All those who have audacity, raise your hand. I'm the only one who has audacity. Oh, I thought so. It's free, by the way. Audacity is free. It comes with the body and mind. So, dissatisfaction, even in gain. False pride. What does false pride mean? What's the difference between false pride and real pride? What? Say that again?
I'm not sure whether I'm right.
Well then, okay, say it anyway. We're going to take a vote after to see what the voters think.
Pride may be when somebody actually does have good qualities.
But if the good qualities are born of the modes, then why is one... But that's what I'm asking. Is there any real justifiable pride?
Pride is the illusion.
Huh?
False pride is pride in the illusion that we live in.
So what's real pride? What's true? Can a soul be proud?
Yes.
What? Wow.
Proud of his relationship with Krishna.
Yeah. So proud of something that's not born of the modes of material nature. Right? So then it's real. So is there anything that's real and not born of the material nature that's springing from the soul itself that he can legitimately be proud of? And yes, something to do with his relationship with Krishna, something to do with others. He's the friend, like Lalita Devi can be proud, for example, of her relationship with Srimati Radharani, that or something like that.
He can be proud in Krishna's qualities.
Okay.
How good Krishna is.
How would that make you proud of it?
That's Krishna, my master.
Okay, there, in how the relationship.
How good my master is.
So, real pride has nothing to do with my qualities, but it has to do with others' qualities, or at least I am Krishna's. That he's accepted me as his dog. So that's legitimate. Real pride. Because it's not springing from the material energy, the modes of material nature. More about the mode of passion. Praying for material advancement. Considering oneself different and better than others. What does it mean to consider oneself different from others? Are we all one? Or are we all two? What are we all? Yes, a little bit. There's something of a tenderness of heart that comes to see when someone else is suffering, and you have the means to mitigate the suffering. One who is a devotee will use that means, and not thinking, well, he's separate and different. One will experience the suffering of and difficulties of others as one's own. Because as you said, seeing that everyone is a servant of Krishna. So seeing oneself as different, so this is also described in Kapila Muni's teachings. And seeing oneself as better than others, also born out of the mode of passion, sense gratification, rash eagerness to fight, a fondness for hearing oneself praised, the tendency to ridicule others. What does that mean? Ridicule others. No? No? Make fun of. No, it's to make fun of others when they're in difficulty, to tease them for their limitations or faults or difficulties, etc. In other words, it's very, very much in the same as considering oneself different from others and better than others. Advertising one's own prowess, powers, and justifying one's actions by one's strength. I'm right. Might makes right, they say in English. I'm right when I do this. And if you don't agree with me, I'll prove that I'm right by fixing you good. These are qualities of the mode of passion. But they're all born from the modes of material nature. They don't have anything to do with the soul because the soul's nature is lover of Krishna. So this is what stops us or helps us in the transcendental path. The qualities help us, which means, or they hinder our going forward on the transcendental path. They hinder our seeing Krishna in all things. They stop and hinder us developing our relationship with Krishna and seeing Him everywhere, seeing Him as He is. So that implies, as we shall hear, that if the qualities, some qualities are very favorable for advancement and some are very unfavorable for advancement in spiritual life, that means, and since the qualities come from the modes of material nature, that means that the configuration of the modes of material nature that affect us will determine whether we go forward, stay the same, or go backwards in our spiritual life. Now, for the ones of the mode of ignorance. Intolerant anger, stinginess, speaking without scriptural authority, violent hatred, living as a parasite. What does that mean, to live as a parasite? Living at the cost of others and not reciprocating. There's a parasitic relationship and a symbiotic relationship. You know that term, symbiotic? You do know? It means when there's a mutual dependence on each other. So actually society causes everyone to be symbiotic, mutually depend on each other. But just being parasitic and taking and not giving, what's an example of someone who's parasitic? And it just sucks the energy. But how about in human society?
Mosquito.
Huh?
I thought
it was mosquito. Mosquito. Just mosquito gives malaria. Thanks for the donation of blood. We'd like to, out of the deep appreciation on our heart, we would like to give you malaria in reciprocation. How about a thief? That's what I was thinking of. A thief consciously takes from society, just steals and takes. No one likes a thief. Hypocrisy. Thinking, speaking one way and acting in another. Chronic fatigue, in other words, just laziness. Quarrel, lamentation. Delusion, unhappiness. I'm ready to go back to reading the ones of goodness again. They make you more happy when you read about them. Depression, unhappiness, sleeping too much, false expectations, fear, and laziness constitute the major qualities of the modes of ignorance. Now please hear about the combination of these three modes. So those are the qualities born of the modes. And now about the modes themselves. My dear Uddhav, Krishna says, the combination of all three modes is present in the mentality of I and mine. The ordinary transactions of this world, which are carried out through the agency of the mind, the objects of perception, the senses and the vital airs of the physical body are all based on the combination of the modes. Now, what do you think about that? What are we understanding from this? The good qualities that we're proud of, the bad qualities that we wish we didn't have and that get in the way, as well as our sense of who we are, our sense of what's mine, all the ordinary transactions in this world that are on the mental platform, which covers really a lot, and even the senses and the airs of life, these are all combinations of the modes of material nature. They're born out of the three modes of material nature, and they don't have anything to do with me. Which means that all the things I love about myself and all the things I hate about myself don't have anything to do with myself at all. This is one way that Maya completely bewilders us, is keeps us involved in thinking about ourselves continuously instead of thinking about Krishna, which is the basic conclusion of every chapter of the Uddhava Gita, is that we should think about Krishna. This is not only the medicine, but this is the perfection as well. It's both the medicine and the perfection of the soul's consciousness. So these things, these qualities, don't have anything to do with us. Now, why is Krishna describing this to Uddhava? He's described it in quite a few chapters of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, in the 14th chapter, in the 17th chapter, in the 18th chapter. He's described the activities of the modes of material nature, so we understand that these forces, goodness, passion, ignorance, they are controlling everything in the material world. So on one hand, when we understand the modes of material nature, we can understand how powerful Krishna is in his interactions in the material world. And also we can understand that all these things that we like in someone and don't like in someone, and like in ourselves and don't like in ourselves, that has nothing to do with reality. This is icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena. This is the duality that bewilders all living entities and engages the consciousness. I like this, I don't like that, I want that, I don't want that. It's black, it's white, it's green, just it's good, it's bad. It's the dualities that engage us in illusory functions of consciousness that keep us from Krishna. So on one hand, with this knowledge, we can see that what's going on in the material world, even on the level of illusion, of the conditioned soul's vision, is all connected to Krishna. And then we can break this sense of duality and give up our icha and dvesha, attraction and repulsion, and see Krishna's energy at work. And therefore, by seeing Krishna's energy at work, we're seeing Krishna. And on the other hand, on the other side, we can see how deeply conditioned this tendency is within us. And we have to understand the process. So this knowledge of getting free from this illusion, so this knowledge can be instrumental for watching Krishna's working and seeing how powerful illusion it is in this world, of which we are a part. When a person devotes himself to religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, the faith, wealth, and sensual enjoyment obtained by his endeavors display the interactions of the three modes of nature. And what we want to do is get out of this very tight prison box of being played with, manipulated by the modes of material nature, and being satisfied thinking that we can be gain something of true value within this closed box of interactions of the material modes of nature. And this is what stops us from doing it, from getting out if we don't aren't sincere enough, strong enough, knowledgeable enough, devoted enough to get out. This is what's playing with the whole material world and causing such and as Kali Yuga progresses, more and more goodness diminishes and passion even diminishes and moving destined to straight ignorance, tamaguna. When a man desires sense gratification, being attached to family life, and when he consequently becomes established in religious and occupational duties, the combinations of nature is manifest. A person exhibiting qualities such as self-control is understood to be predominantly in the mode of goodness. Similarly, a passionate person is recognized by his lust, and one in ignorance is recognized by qualities such as anger. But these qualities that are affecting these souls don't have anything to do with him, the soul. It all has to do with the conditioning, his karma, his the bindings that tightly wrap him up and disallow him from manifesting his true nature. Any person, whether man or woman, who worships me with loving devotion, offering his or her prescribed duties unto me without material attachment, is understood to be situated in goodness. So that's the good elevating, exalting, cleansing qualities or activities of someone in goodness, is that he's going to worship me. Bhajante mam bhaktya, with devotion, nirapeksha, indifferent to the results. So what's this referring to? This is referring to someone who's in vanashrama, and because he's worshipping Krishna with loving devotion, yata pravita bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam, and performing his prescribed duties without attachment. So this is the position of goodness, work without attachment. But a person who's doing that will not stay in the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is meant to elevate us beyond the mode of goodness. And there is such a tendency, by the way, to get attached to the mode of goodness. The peacefulness, the I am right, the morality of it, the judiciousness. But it tends to make one feel better than others. So a pride can come, and one becomes attached to this mode of goodness. So we're talking here about worshippers. So that's how someone acts in his worship in the mode of goodness. Now, in the mode of passion, when a person worships me, this is 11, by his prescribed duties with the hope of gaining material benefits, still, while worshiping me, Krishna says, his nature should be understood to be in passion. And one who worships me with the desire to commit violence against others is in ignorance. 10:11. Excuse me. The three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, influence the living entity, but not me, Krishna says. I am above this. These are the binding forces, and I remain forever unbound. And these forces are under my control, manifesting within his mind. They induce the living entity to become attached to material bodies and other created objects. In this way, the living entity is bound up. It is the mode of the modes of nature causing the attachment to awaken in the mind of a living entity to suitable objects, or objects that are suitable to to the modes of material nature which dominate his consciousness. So a person in the mode of passion will tend to get attached to accumulation, for example, of objects or particular objects. And a person in the mode of goodness will become attached to being detached from objects. And a person in the mode of ignorance will become attached to being envious of what other people have and all the dissatisfactions, no matter how much he has. That was in the mode of passion, I think it was meant. All these are just coming from the modes of material nature, and they don't have anything to do with me, the soul. We are better than we are, actually. So, of course, the question comes up, and Krishna will answer it, as he did in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how to get free from this incredible tight binding that the material modes of nature are causing. When the mode of goodness, which is luminous means what? Gives light. It is illuminating. Light has the quality of removing darkness and allowing one to see things accurately. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. The mode of goodness, which is luminous, pure, and auspicious, when it predominates over passion and ignorance, a man becomes endowed with happiness, virtue, knowledge, and other good qualities. So he thinks himself happy, peaceful, and he has good qualities, and he looks down at others who don't have these wonderful qualities, but they're being just springing up from the modes of goodness that are binding him. When the mode of passion, which causes attachment, separatism, and activity, conquers ignorance and goodness, a man begins to work hard to acquire prestige and fortune. Thus, in the mode of passion, he experiences anxiety and struggle. So one would think, when one is motivated to work hard to gain prestige and fortune, one would think that one will be free from anxiety when one attains these things. But actually, the effort causes anxiety and struggle, and after one even attains them, one is in more anxiety and more struggle. Even Indra, who's the king of heaven, is always in anxiety and always struggling. Every time a yogi performs a lot of austerities and he's gaining potency and power and punya, Indra becomes an anxiety. My position is threatened. Soon as one has a position, if it's there in any other mood than service, one always will get threatened by anyone powerful coming up near us. One will feel threatened, and as soon as one feels threatened, one's in anxiety. So this is by watching how we react to different circumstances, we can see which modes of material nature affect us. Just gaining anxiety and more struggle. When the mode of ignorance, so we heard what happens in goodness and then in passion, And the modes of material nature, as the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes, they're always pushing against each other and struggling to see who is going to dominate. So in one part of the day, one mode of material nature, passion, may overcome ignorance and goodness. And another part of the day, we feel a little bit peaceful and goodness has triumphed over passion and ignorance. And another times of the day, it's just sleepiness and ignorance is dominating. So this is all the interactions of the modes of material nature, and it's because it's daivyesha gunamayi, it's divinely empowered, very difficult to overcome. Mode of ignorance conquers passion and goodness. It covers one's consciousness and makes one foolish and dull. Falling into lamentation and illusion, A person in the mode of ignorance sleeps excessively, indulges in false hopes, and displays violence toward others. When consciousness becomes clear and the senses are detached from matter, one experiences fearlessness within the material body and detachment from the material mind. You should understand this situation to be the predominance of the mode of goodness, in which one has the opportunity to realize me. And it's clear when one hears this why the mode of goodness is so preferable for spiritual life, and so much of the way that devotees are prescribed to live, prescribed and proscribed, the things that we should do and the things that we shouldn't do, are meant to keep us primarily in the mode of goodness so that one can advance, because the consciousness is clear in the mode of goodness, not foggy and confused and dull. The senses are detached, not attached, fearless, and detached from the material mind even. So how important is this cultivation of the mode of goodness? And that's basically the lifestyle of the Hare Krishna movement. Because it's conducive. It's not an end in itself. We're not trying to... It's not the International Society for Detachment from Matter or Detachment from the Material Mind or the International Society for Fearlessness or the International Society for Clear Consciousness, and nor is it the International Society for Being Detached from Matter. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, for being situated in one's loving relationship with Krishna, one's true self in rasa, Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato Mati, one's consciousness is involved in one's relationship with Krishna. And then, but to get to that point, the mode of goodness is required. And as we read Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that sometimes he, practically speaking, equates the mode of goodness with Krishna consciousness. They're so closely linked. You should discern the mode of passion by its symptoms. So it's important to understand the symptoms of the modes so that we can, and see which modes that affect us, so that we can cultivate the proper modes which are conducive for our spiritual advancement. This is what passion does. It distorts the intelligence because of too much activity. The inability of the perceiving senses to disentangle themselves from mundane objects. An unhealthy condition of the working physical organs and the unsteady perplexity of the mind. Mind is always disturbed, confused, unsteady. Always the intelligence is overly active. Thinking, 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 planning, scheming, thinking, thinking, defending. The inability of the perceiving senses to disentangle from mundane objects. You can't stop doing what you're doing even though you know you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. And an unhealthy condition of the working physical organs, because naturally if the physical organs are in the mode of goodness, then they will remain healthy. So when one's higher awareness fails and finally disappears, and one is thus unable to concentrate his attention, his mind is ruined and manifests ignorance and depression. You should understand the situation to be the predominance of the mode of ignorance. With the increase of the mode of goodness, the strength of the demigod similarly increases. When passion increases, the demoniac becomes strong, and with the rise of ignorance, O Uddhav, the strength of the most wicked increases. Rakshasas. That's the word. Tamasi Uddhava Rakshasam. The Rakshasas are worse than the Asuras even. They're the most wicked. And if you go to any big city, in the daytime people are running around, and then as night falls, you see the lower modes of material nature coming out, and finally, when it's very dark and very late, the rakshasas are about. They're just bad people, evil people. It should be understood that alert wakefulness comes from the mode of goodness, sleep with dreaming from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. The fourth state of consciousness pervades these three and is transcendental. We'll read the purport to that in the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, to 20 here. Those who are in the mode of goodness are awake to their real self-interest. Those who are predominantly in the mode of passion are sleeping on the lap of the material nature, dreaming of becoming happy by means of sense gratification. Those, that's such an interesting description of what the mode of passion does to our consciousness. Sleeping on the lap of material nature and dreaming of becoming happy by means of sense gratification. In other words, actually asleep, actually illusioned, completely in the grip of Maya, and dreaming the if only dreams. If only I had this, then I would be happy. And we go through our lives dreaming on the lap of Maya. And those who are in the mode of ignorance are in the deep slumber of nescience, which is practically a state of unconsciousness. However, those who cultivate the mode of pure goodness are always under the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is no influence of mundane goodness, passion, or ignorance. Daivam prakritam asrita. So that's what we really aspire for, to be under the shelter of the internal energy, which means pure consciousness in a serving mood to Krishna, and then that energy, that internal energy, becomes our shelter instead of the, or offers us shelter instead of, right now the Mahamaya offers us shelter, and we've taken shelter of Mahamaya, but we need the shelter of Krishna's serving energy, his internal energy. Now, what is the result? Here's some more results. Learned persons, 21, dedicated to Vedic culture, are elevated by the mode of goodness to higher and higher positions. The mode of ignorance, on the other hand, forces one to fall headfirst into lower and lower births, and by the mode of passion, one continues transmigrating through human bodies. Those who leave this world in the mode of goodness go to the heavenly planets. Those who pass away in the mode of passion remain in the world of human beings, and those dying in the mode of ignorance must go to hell. But those who are free from the influence of all modes of nature come to me. So Krishna is beginning to introduce the concept of being free from the modes of material nature, free from the binding force, from the conditioning force, from the controlling force of his material energy. And that is to be situated in his spiritual energy, to be situated in his service, anya bilasita sunyam, gyanakama anavita, anakulena krishna anushyalam. That is bhakti uttam. Just who am I? I'm a servant of Krishna, and I do what's favorable for my service. I accept what's favorable, and I don't accept what's unfavorable for Krishna's service. Faithful, humble. under Krishna's protection and looking to Krishna as maintainer, being part of his group, acknowledging who I am as his, and not having any other identities floating around in our consciousness, false identities, false elements of false ego, no divisions of mind, that I'm just Krishna. That's who I am. And he can do with me as he likes, because I'm his. And if we try to act like that, give ourselves to Krishna, chant constantly, pray to Krishna constantly, serve consciously, but if the modes of passion and ignorance are deeply affecting us, will last like 7 or 8 seconds probably before one of the modes pushes us off, derails us from our fresh determination. So one has to be very purified. It's this position of surrender on which bhakti is built as an exalted consciousness. It means that there is no swartha. Swartha means self-interest or selfishness in the consciousness. What a relief. It's the selfishness that gives us the sense of separateness. And everyone, as Kali Yuga progresses, experiences the misery of separateness more and more and more and more and more. But not separateness from Krishna, but aloneness. Separateness from everything and everyone else. Alienation, they call it. Without the feeling connected to our Lord and Masters. And it is very, in Kali Yuga, everyone is so lonely because of that. And being tricked by the illusory energy and the motive passion to think, oh, the incompleteness that I'm feeling and the alienation and separateness that I'm feeling will be overcome by buying one of those, getting into this type of relationship, doing that. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And even people in Kali Yuga, they feel separate from their own bodies. And they're separate from where they are even. At least people in the previous ages, they might have been some ignorant, but at least they were feeling one with their ignorance. But in Kali Yuga, everyone is dissociated even from that. You know, they don't feel comfortable anywhere. That's disturbed minds. This is Kali Yuga. Absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness. Knowledge based on duality is in the mode of passion. And foolish materialistic knowledge is in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge based upon me, however, is understood to be transcendental. So that means there are different types of knowledges. Why don't we read about these different types of knowledges? The Lord explains here, that spiritual knowledge of His Supreme Personality is transcendental to ordinary religious knowledge in the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one understands the existence of a higher spiritual nature within all things. In the mode of passion, one acquires scientific knowledge of the material body. And in the mode of ignorance, one fixes one's mind on the sense objects without higher awareness, perceiving things as a small child or retarded person does. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborately explains in his commentary on this verse that the material mode of goodness does not award perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. He quotes from Bhagavatam 6:14:2, proving that many great demigods in the mode of goodness could not understand the transcendental personality of Lord Krishna. That's descending knowledge. To understand Krishna is very rare. One has to have descending knowledge coming down from Krishna, from the spiritual world. Otherwise, how? From the mode, because the mode of goodness is in the box of the material world, how will it award us knowledge of what's outside this box? Krishna. So that knowledge, Golokeda Premadana, it has to come, it has to penetrate the dark material world. It is a gift. Residence in the forest is in the mode of goodness, except when that forest is? Yes. That van, that is not the mode of goodness. But it's also not the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, not the mode of ignorance either. Residence in a town is in the mode of passion. Residence in a gambling house displays the quality of ignorance. And residence in a place where I reside is transcendental. A worker free of attachment is in the mode of goodness. A worker blinded by personal desire is in the mode of passion. And a worker who has completely forgotten how to tell right from wrong is in the mode of ignorance. But a worker who has taken shelter of me is understood to be transcendental to the modes of nature. So what does that mean, to work taking shelter of Krishna? It means, as we know, to work just as a servant. Because the modes of material nature give us other identities, other senses of ourself, based on the configuration of the modes of material nature that specifically affect us. We have different sense of self, and it will always be incorrect and within the modes until we actually identify ourselves as Krishna's. So working in that mood that I'm Krishna's servant and I'm engaged in Krishna's service and doing something that Krishna has authorized as his service under the direction of one of Krishna's servants, that places us, if our consciousness is in that mood, that places us transcendentally working. Faith directed towards spiritual life is in the mode of goodness. Faith rooted in fruit of work is in the mode of passion. Faith residing in irreligious activities is in the mode of ignorance. So irreligion, religion, that's past ignorance and goodness, and fruitive, attachment to the results, passion. But faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental. So what does it mean, faith in activities? Faith that I should do this, trusting that this activity is the best thing for me to do. Influenced heavily by the three modes of material nature, or influenced heavily by the transcendental. Faith in devotional service is purely transcendental. Food that is wholesome, pure, and obtained without difficulty is in the mode of goodness. Food that gives immediate pleasure to the senses is in the mode of passion. And food that is unclean and causes distress is in the mode of ignorance. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness, knowing that one's eternal, that one ultimately isn't affected by the modes of nature. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. So to combine this with the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's different results of these type of activities, and the happiness of the mode of goodness is pleasurable. Happiness in the mode of passion is
present in the beginning.
It's so sweet in the beginning, but then in the end it turns to misery. And happiness, mode of ignorance, is miserable in the beginning and miserable at the end. And it's bad for you, and it causes deeper and ever deepening illusion. That happiness found within me is transcendental. That means within Krishna, and Krishna gives his transcendental happiness to his devotees. Therefore, material substance, place, result of activity, time, knowledge, work, the performer of work, faith, state of consciousness, species of life, and destination after death were all based on the three modes of material nature. O best of human beings, all states of material being are related to the interaction of the enjoying soul and material nature. That's the conditioned soul, is the soul who is in false ego, and his mood, despite whatever situation he's in the material world, he's in the mood of the enjoyer. And it's all states of being, states of consciousness, states of activity, states of his body, they're all affected by the modes of material nature that affect him. Whether seen, heard of, or only conceived within the mind, they are without exception constituted of the modes of nature. There's nothing other than this going on in the material world. What do you think about that? There's nothing else going on in the material world but different interplaying of the modes of material nature. Sometimes it's seems very refined, and it's in the mode of goodness. And sometimes it's abominable and terrifying in the mode of ignorance, but it's the modes of material nature that's controlling people. What do you think, that there's nothing else going on? What do you think about that?
Should get out.
As possible as quickly. How quick is possible?
Change consciousness.
What else do you think about this? It's incredible knowledge, isn't it? Well, yeah. We get humble, and then when there's some humility, then there's a chance of surrender and taking shelter. But I'd like to move to the conclusion, because up to this point, Krishna has said that everything's the modes, as Prashant is pointing out. But here, moving towards the conclusion. O gentle Uddhav, all these different phases of conditioned life arise from work born of the modes of material nature. The living entity who conquers these modes manifested from the mind can dedicate himself to me by the process of devotional service and thus attain pure love for me. I'm going to read that again. The living entity who conquers these modes manifested from the mind can dedicate himself to me by the process of devotional service and thus attain pure love for me. So this implies, the way that this verse states it, is that first you get free from the modes, the living entity who conquers these modes, which are manifest from the mind. So he's conquered the modes, then he can dedicate himself to me through devotional service. Because it's clear that unless we get beyond the modes, we can't dedicate ourselves to Krishna. Because the modes will always stop us, they'll make us act self-centeredly. And this is basically what Krishna says in the 14th chapter at the end. What does he say? Mamchayo. And then Sagunan, then when you're continuously engaged in devotional service. But he says it the other way, doesn't he? And it could be, well, this is the process of devotional service, though. It's the process of becoming purified, and the more we become purified and the more then the more capacity we have to develop our love for Krishna and get that higher taste, and the more we get the higher taste, the more we become detached, and the more we become detached, we can give ourselves to Krishna more and be more sincere in our service, and then we develop more. Krishna reciprocates with us. So it's very, very much a process, a gradual process. But we see also that Pingala took it up fast when she got hit with the disappointment. And also the Avanti Brahmana, boom! Misfortune came to him, distress came to him, just pushed him over the edge of doubt, of faithlessness, of he just went over, got off the mental platform because he had no choice. He got kicked out. He lost everything. And so within that terrible situation, by an ordinary definition, was the most fortunate. The living entity who conquers these modes manifests from the mind. So that's again, that's the point that the Avanti Brahmana said, that the trouble is the mind. The stress is coming from the mind. The stress is coming from the mind. The mind is under the influence of the modes of material nature. And then he can dedicate himself to me purely by the process of devotional service. And then the result of that is madbhava prapadyate. He receives by his nishta, man-nishta, because of his dedication to me in bhakti yogena, he receives love for me. Madbhavaya prapadyate. He receives the qualification of love for me, which actually gives the qualification of knowing Krishna. And knowing Krishna gives the qualification for loving Krishna more. From the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here. Well, first I'd like to read the purport and then comment by Vishwanath. The word madbhavaya papadyate indicate the attainment to love for God, or the same state of existence as that of the Supreme Lord. Indicates love for God, or the same state of existence as that of the Supreme Lord. Actual liberation is residence within the eternal kingdom of God, where life is full of bliss and knowledge. The conditioned soul falsely imagines himself to be the enjoyer of the modes of nature, and thus a particular type of material work is generated, the reaction of which binds the conditioned soul to repeated birth and death. The fruitless process can be counteracted by loving service to the Lord, as described here. We'll read from part of what Vishwanath says. Here it is also stated that the influence of the three modes of nature is subdued by the process. What does subdued mean?
Conquered.
Yes, conquered or lessened at least. Minimized, conquered is a good one. By the process of devotional service. Therefore, it must be concluded that the practice of devotional service is fully transcendental. In other words, it's not in the modes. And the Mayavadis say that devotional service is in the modes, that Krishna is in the modes, his leela is in the modes, and the only thing outside of the modes is Brahman. So the practice of devotional service is fully transcendental. Material entities, such as incense, sandalwood paste, flowers, ghee lamps, an umbrella, or chamara, when used in the worship of the Supreme Lord, are also considered transcendental. The faith that with which a devotee executes devotional service is also transcendental. It's all composed of the same, beyond the three modes, it's all composed of that transcendental substance. The Supreme Lord has thus confirmed that all objects related to his service are to be considered transcendental and not products of the three modes of material nature. 33. Therefore, having developed this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in loving service to me. Mam bhajantu vachakshana. Those who are intelligent should worship me completely and not act according to the modes of material nature. So that means that one can't just with one's intelligence say, yes, Krishna's right. From now on, I'm not going to act according to the modes of material nature. I'm only going to engage exclusively in loving service to Krishna. I'm going to, from now on, from this moment on, free myself from this contamination. Well, when we actually think like that, or chant in that mood, or pray like that, Krishna hears that prayer, despite our inability to actually live on that platform and live up to that ideal. But the desire is itself glorious, and the calling out to Krishna with that mood, tava smriti chayachate, the prayer is glorious, and Krishna hears that. And he writes our name in his little book, of course, in his new iPad. He writes it down. A wise sage, free from all material association and unbewildered, should subdue his senses and worship me. The same point Krishna is saying. The conclusion of this knowledge, this transcendental knowledge, is to worship him. Subdue his senses. Be self-controlled. And that comes from the mode of goodness. And worship Krishna. He should conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by engaging himself only with things in the mode of goodness. Beware of darkness. Beware of passion. Beware of ignorance. Then, being fixed in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the material mode of goodness by indifference towards the modes. So, fix oneself in the mode of goodness and worship Krishna. Become transcendental to all the modes, even the mode of goodness, and become indifferent from that and do what Krishna wants. Surrender to him with great devotion, and thus pacified within his mind, the spirit soul, freed from the modes of nature, gives up the very cause of his conditioned life and attains me. So, giving up the mode of goodness and acting on the transcendental platform, like the example of Krishna and his friends, they're stealing butter. Krishna calls the gopis in the middle of the night. And they're so much in the mode of goodness on one level, so chaste and so good and so loyal and dedicated that Krishna has to play his flute so they, like the raging torrents of a river, their desire to be with him will break over the high walls of the banks of the river. So he plays his flute to make their desire increase and increase and increase. But that's transcendental, because mode of goodness would say it would be, or this is it has its basis in things like morality. So this is improper. So that's the mode of goodness. But the highest morality, the highest transcendental activity is not limited by the mode of goodness either. It's just acting fully selflessly, unselfishly for the pleasure of Krishna. So that is transcending. But because that purity is the because utility is the principle, means that anything can be used for Krishna's pleasure, but yet purity has to be the force, that we can't bluff Krishna, and because everything can be used in Krishna's service, and anything that is pleasing to Krishna should be done, we can't do things selfishly
using the excuse that, oh, it's for Krishna's pleasure. I'm utilizing Krishna's service and things like that. Because we may be able to fool others, we may be able to fool ourselves, but we can't fool
Krishna.
Yes. He knows. Because why? He's in our hearts. Then the final verse in this chapter. Freed from the subtle conditionings of the mind and from the modes of nature born of material consciousness. That sounds very good, doesn't it? Free from the subtle conditionings of the mind and the gross conditionings of the mind, because they went a long time ago. And free from the modes of material nature born of material consciousness, born of false ego, passion, ignorance, and goodness combined together in one way or another. Free from the subtle conditions, not only the gross conditions, but the subtle ones as well. And free from the modes, the living entity becomes completely satisfied. Ah, finally. By experiencing my transcendental form, then one can actually experience. When one's consciousness is clean, then one can actually experience Krishna. He no longer searches for enjoyment in the external energy, nor does he contemplate or remember such enjoyment within himself. Then he is free. So Krishna is bringing it again to this point. This transcendental knowledge of the modes of material nature and how they bind, how they condition, how they even bring one to the point of freedom. And the final, the ultimate, is they bring one to Krishna, or rather going beyond that. He's beyond that. He's with Krishna. He breaks fully his identification with the material, with material existence. And he sees things as they are, all in relationship with Krishna. And he sees Krishna. And then he can relate with Krishna, because as one has to be fire to get near fire and be comfortable, one has to be pure and spiritual to get near Krishna. I'll just conclude here with a purport. The human form of life is a rare opportunity for achieving spiritual liberation in Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna has elaborately described in this chapter the characteristics of the three modes of nature and the transcendental situation of Krishna consciousness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has ordered us to take shelter of the holy names of Lord Krishna, by which process we can easily transcend the modes of nature and begin our real life of loving devotional service to Krishna. Easily transcend. But one has to chant in the proper way. And what is that proper way? Offenselessly and full dependence, fully taking shelter. And we'll just conclude here with the purport, the comment of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Being situated on the platform of transcendental satisfaction, when a devotee transcends even the mode of goodness, he is situated on the platform of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Simply by the influence of devotional service, the two propensities of material enjoyment and detachment, which are exhibited on the platform of goodness, are dispelled. That's fully transcendental. Just whatever is pleasing to Krishna. I look at the material world not to enjoy, not with detachment, but it is Krishna's. When a liberated soul is engaged in the transcendental service of the Satchidananda Lord, the modes of material nature cannot touch him. In this chapter, Lord Krishna enumerated the characteristics of the three modes of material nature, and he described the devotional service of the Lord as being transcendental to these modes. Lord Chaitanya has recommended in this age that one should incessantly chant the holy names of the Lord as the best means of engaging in devotional service and then transcending the modes of material nature. So there's another point of the chanting. It should begin and it should never end. Then it's easy. Okay. We'll stop here, and what I would like to do
meet again at a quarter of one. But why don't we go over this, the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's a short chapter, so we'll read it a little bit quickly, and then ask for questions. And we'll just see if we can work out. We'll supplement what Krishna has told Uddhava with what he's told Arjuna, and see maybe we can do a little analysis. But we'll, it's nice to hear them together. Okay, and then we'll have questions, if there's any questions at that time.